Up to the very, very famous sugya of mitzvah strichas kavana. Now, of course, because this is our final week of the shir before we break, we're not going to get through all the gemaras about mitzvah strichas kavana. And I want to just do what we did last week by the other sugya when we spoke about mitzvah lavadanus, just to give a background in order that we should appreciate a little bit what the gemara is talking about. So, the sugya of mitzvah strichas kavana begins on the bottom of chaf ches amad aleph, where the gemara talks about somebody who is shalchulei la'avua d'shmul. This is about 7 or 8 lines from the bottom of the Yamud. Shalchulei la'avua d'shmul. They sent the following shayla to Avua d'shmul. Kafal v'alchal matzah. What if you have somebody who is forced to eat the matzah on Leil Seder? So is that a fulfillment of your obligation or not? Says the Gemara, yatzah. Even if you're forced, and it really was against your wishes, and you didn't want to eat the matzah, but you ate it anyway, yatzah yoyotze. Ask the Gemara, kafal man. Who forced you? Who shoved it down your throat? Elamer, if you're going to say kafo she, that we're talking about where somebody has, he's hallucinating and he has a voice in his head that says, you better eat the matzah, better eat the matzah. Vatanya, itim chalim, itim shotim. When you have somebody who at certain times in their life is fully comprehensive of everything that's going on, and at other times in their life they don't really understand everything that's happening. So the Gemara says, kushu chalim, which is a strange way to say it because chalim in Aramaic means healthy, and chole in Hebrew means sick, so don't confuse that. Over here it means kishu chalim, when the person is well and he's completely understanding of what he's doing, he's able to perform mitzvahs in the normal state because now he's in complete understanding of what he's doing. Kishu shota, however, in the times of the day when he's having an off time, unfortunately, when he's not really understanding what's happening, he's like a shota and he cannot perform the mitzvah. So if you have somebody who has voices in their heads and you have somebody who's forced to do certain things only because they're hallucinating, so that's called a shota, and he's not in performance of the mitzvah. We spoke last week about how that applies to many different areas of halacha as well. When a person does a mitzvah at a time when they're not obligated to perform the mitzvah, and now later on they become obligated, do they have to once again go back and perform the mitzvah again? We spoke about Rabbi Kiva Eger, who has a very fascinating shaila about a bar mitzvah boy on the night of his bar mitzvah, who goes ahead and eats before he becomes a bar mitzvah. He goes ahead and eats right before nightfall, but he goes ahead and he's responsible. So not only does he eat, but he benches right away to make sure he fulfills his obligation. But now he becomes a bar mitzvah. And the bar mitzvah takes place within 72 minutes of when he ate his meal. So the halacha is that, kol zman, you're within 72 minutes of the meal, you're still obligated in birchas hamazon. But he's going to say, I already benched because I benched right after I ate. However, you benched when you were a katan. You weren't really obligated. But now you're a gadol, and you still have, your stomach is still saveya from the food that you ate. So maybe your Rabbi Kiva Eger has a suffix. Maybe he has to go back and bench again because he hasn't fulfilled his obligation that he first was obligated to bench because that was only when he was a katan, and that's not going to be able to take care of his chiyuv when he becomes a gadol. So all that, all those kinds of shailas, the Taz talks about it also. What if you have a katan in the middle of Shiva, and then he becomes a gadol right in the middle of Shiva? Terrible story, but it could happen. Or if you have somebody in the middle of Shloshim, and now in the middle of Shloshim he was a katan, now he becomes a gadol in the middle of Shloshim, should we assume he has to go back and sit Shiva? Because at the time he was not a bar chiyuva, and now he becomes a bar chiyuva all over again, and therefore whatever he did before won't be able to take care of his obligation that he has. Now all these kinds of very important questions all stem from our Gemara, because the point of our Gemara is when a person does something at a state when they are not in full obligation, either because you're a katan or because you're a shota, not that a katan and a shota are the same, but a shota simply doesn't have an understanding, and later on they flip back into it and they come back to an understanding of what's happening, so then maybe we should say that they're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. So says the Gemara as follows. Amar Avashi, we're talking about a case. When do we say that if somebody forces you to eat matzah on Leil HaSeder, you're going to fulfill your obligation of achilas matzah? We're talking about a case, shekafu parsiim. We're talking about a case where the Persians came along and shoved the matzah down your throat. Why do they want to do such a thing? Strange. Usually they're shoving a davar ha'asar down your throat, or they're telling you you're not allowed to eat the matzah because that's going to do your mitzvah. But over here the Gemara says we're talking about shekafu parsiim, that they go ahead and they force you to eat it. So even though I have no intention at all to perform the mitzvah, I'm sitting here trying to have a nice time, I'm relaxing with my family, all of a sudden somebody walks into the room, shoves the matzah down my throat, says the Gemara, you have said the mitzvah. Amar Rava, Zosomeris, don't you see a clear indication from here? Hatokei alashir yatza. Don't you see from here that if somebody on Rosh Hashanah is sitting there with a shofar, and they're blowing just because they think the music is so beautiful, they think that the sound that comes out of a shofar is melodious, so maybe you should say the person is in performance of the mitzvah of shofar. Why? The same way that if a person eats the matzah not because they want to, but because it's shoved down their throat, Yotze the mitzvah, so too, if a person listens to the shofar because they think it's a wonderful sound, maybe you should be in performance of the mitzvah as well. Says the Gemara Pshita, of course you yotze the mitzvah of shofar, why not? Hainu hach, that's the same thing as the case of matzah. Why do you need to say that? Ma'u detema, says the Gemara, hasam achal matzah amar achmana. Over there by the mitzvah matzah, the Torah says you have to eat the matzah of ha'achal. And bottom line, you got the matzah down your throat and that's good enough. Avil hacha, but over here, zichron shuaksiv. Over here it says zichron shur, that you have to have in mind, you have to have an understanding as to what it is that you're doing. V'hai misasik ba'almahu, and this person is not understanding at all what they are engaged in. They're just listening to the shofar because they think it sounds like a nice symphony. V'hai misasik ba'almahu, and therefore I would have said maybe by shofar there's room to argue that you shouldn't perform your mitzvah if you're not thinking about it, because the pasuk says specifically zichron shur kamash malan. We have the pasuk tells me, I'm sorry, the Gemara teaches us, no, that even in our case, you're in performance of the mitzvah. Now, as a side, the Gemara says, Alma, what you see, a clear indication from all this is, Kasava Rava, mitzvos ein srichos kavan. And this is where we get into the whole discussion over here, which is a very, very rich shas topic, and that is about mitzvos srichavan or not. So the Gemara says, we have a clear indication from our Gemara, from the fact that you tell me that if you have matzah shoved down your throat and you're not thinking about the mitzvah at all, you're yotze the mitzvah. And for the fact that you also tell me that if a person has the shofar blowing and they don't have in mind at all for the mitzvah, they just think they're hearing a nice sound, that you're in performance of the mitzvah, that would seem to indicate that mitzvos ein tzrichos kavanah. You don't have to think about it, because otherwise, how can I perform the mitzvah in such a way? You didn't think about the mitzvah that you're doing. So that's what the Gemara wants to argue. So now let's get into the sugya about mitzvos tzrichos kavanah. The Gemara...
There's a difference between the person having matzah shoved down his throat. That's on the gavra. The person who's listening to the kios or the shofar blows, he's not the person actually blowing the shofar, is he?
So what if he's the Baal Tokeya?
So
what do you say about the person like that? I'm the Baal Tokeya. I'm only blowing because I think that I enjoy this act of blowing, not because I want to do the mitzvah.
So that goes back to the question of whether the Baal Tokeya has... Okay.
Baal Tokeya also has an obligation.
Right. So then what if a Baal Tokeya has already fulfilled his obligation to blow shofar and then goes to blow for someone else?
Yeah.
So he's already fulfilled his obligation, but is now trying to be moti other people.
Okay.
So does it matter whether does his mitzvah...
So let's slow down here. So the Gemara says as follows. The Gemara says, Nehemshech HaGemara, which we didn't read yet, but the Gemara says, Amar Abzeira, it's later on in the daf, the Gemara says, Amar Abzeira, you look at the bottom... Last four words on the daf. Amar le Rab Zera l'shame. Skip all the way down. Amar le Rab Zera l'shame. Rab Zera told his gabai, Ichabin v'takali. When you're blowing the shofar for me, I want you to have in mind that you're being motzi me in the mitzvah. Which seems to indicate, in the other direction, that what? Mitzvah strichas kavana. Because otherwise, why is he telling him to have in mind for him, even if he doesn't have in mind for him? Mitzvah sein strichas kavana, like our Gemara just said, why does the gabai have to have in mind specifically that he should have in mind to be mekayim the mitzvah, to be motzi Rab Zeira in the mitzvah? If mitzvah is tzrichas kavana, you don't need that. So many we shown him understand that it's a machlokus in the Gemara, whether mitzvah is tzrichas kavana or not. First, Gemara indicates from the fact that you blow a shofar only because you like the sound, it would seem to indicate you don't have to have kavana. This Gemara seems to indicate from the fact that Rab Zeira specifically tells the Baal Tokeya, I want you to have in mind that you're being motzi me in the mitzvah, it would seem to indicate that mitzvahs are tzrichas kavanah. You have to have in mind before you do the mitzvah, otherwise you don't have fulfillment of the mitzvah at all.
In that case, he may not be required, he has to be specifically thinking that he's doing it for the other guy, not necessarily kavanah in the mitzvah.
Oh, very good. So half of the Rishonim learned the way we said it, half of the Rishonim learned the way you said it, that no, he's not arguing that mitzvah tzrichas kavanah, he's arguing that when you have to have a relationship between two people because you're doing the mitzvah in order to take care of me, then the way to make that relationship is to say, you're going to have in mind for me, and I'm going to have in mind to be motzi with you. But that has nothing to do with mitzvah tzrichas kavanah. It's a totally different discussion. So that's a very important point you're making, that the Rishonim disagree. How do we understand that line of the Gemara? What does it mean? Should we assume that it's a machlokas, whether mitzvah tzrichas kavanah or not? Or should we assume, no, everybody agrees mitzvah ain't tzrichas kavanah? This Gemara over here about Ichavin v'takali, that's only talking about when you're trying to have a relationship between two people doing a mitzvah. When you're doing that, then we have to have kavanah to be motzi each other. Otherwise, it's not going to work. So this is a major, major discussion in the Rishonim exactly how to understand it. Now, the question is, when it comes down to the halacha l'maisa, what do we do? How do we assume the psak would turn out when we come to halacha l'maisa with regard to the din of mitzvah tzrichas kavanah? So, This is also a major machlokas harishonim, as we mentioned. Should we assume that mitzvah tzrichas kavanah or not? And if you look in Shulchan Aruch, the Shulchan Aruch in Siman Samach, number 60, the Shulchan Aruch writes as follows: Yesh omrim she'ein mitzvah tzrichas kavanah. Shulchan Aruch writes, some are of the opinion that you don't have to have specific intent when you're performing a mitzvah. It's good enough just to do the mitzvah, that's fine. Shake the lulav, you don't have to think about it. Blow the shofar, don't think about it, it's good enough. The Yesh omrim, says the Shulchan Aruch, and some are of the opinion that mitzvahs are tzrichas kavanah. In order to perform the mitzvah, you have to actually have specific intent that you want to perform the mitzvah. Otherwise, it doesn't work. V'chein halacha. V'chein halacha. So the Shulchan Aruch tells us that the halacha is mitzvahs tzrichas kavana. Mitzvahs tzrichas kavana. And now the Achronim have a disagreement. What does the Shulchan Aruch mean? You know, sometimes you look in Shulchan Aruch and things become more complicated than when you started. So that this is one of those cases. We have a machlokes harishonim whether mitzvah tzrichas kavanah or not, based on our gemara. Trickles down to the Shulchan Aruch, he says, some say yes, some say no. That yes. Now the Achronim have a discussion, what does the Shulchan Aruch mean? Did the Shulchan Aruch mean b'taras vaday? Did the Shulchan Aruch mean that those rishonim are right, that mitzvah tzrichas kavanah, and that's what it is? Or does he just mean to say, because it's a machlokes harishonim, it's a suffix, we don't know what to do, so therefore you should be machmir. Therefore, you should be machmir. What does the Shulchan Aruch mean when he says v'chein halacha? And he'll say, what's the difference?
What is the Gemara? So the Gemara's premise is that it's l'chatkilu or b'dievet initially. No,
the Gemara's premise is if you need kavana and you don't have the kavana, you're not yotzei at all. Not just l'chatkilu.
No, on that side. But I'm saying when the whole thing that is not you don't need entry of the kavana. Was that a b'dievet position or a Gemara's l'chatkilu position?
Sounds like even lechatchil. It's not necessary. It's not necessary. That's what it seems. This is a discussion in the Achronim exactly how do we understand the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch. What's the difference, whether it's B'taras Vade or B'taras Safik? The difference is, the Magen Avram writes, B'shem the Radvaz, the difference is going to be by Dinim D'Araisa and by Dinim D'Rabbanon. We know that Safik D'Araisa L'Chumra, Safik D'Rabbanon L'Kula, and therefore the Radvaz is of the opinion, and this is what's quoted L'Halach in the Magen Avram, that we split the Psak. Because it's a major machlokas harishonim, and because it's a major machlokas in our Gemara, and the Mechaber himself is not sure how to paskin, therefore when it comes to a mitzvah d'araisa, we hold mitzvah tzrichas kavana. You have to have specific intent to perform the mitzvah, otherwise you're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah. When it comes to a mitzvah midrabanan, like lighting Hanukkah candles, like listening to the Megillah, or anything like that, then we assume that mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavana. So you'll say, how can we make an announcement before the laning of the Megillah? Everybody should have in mind to be yotzei with the chazan, with the Baal Kriya. Why do we do that? Right? It's only mitzvah derabanan. The answer is because that's the second din. The second halacha is, even if you assume that mitzvahs ain't srichas kavana, that's what you mentioned, you still have the factor of when I'm having someone else perform the mitzvah on my behalf, when I'm having someone else be motzi me, I have to make sure that I have intent in order to connect me with him. He has to have intent to be motzi me. I have to have intention to be yotzi with him. So that's why by Mikra Megillah we do that. But otherwise it wouldn't be necessary because Mikra Megillah is only Din D'Rabbanan. So this is the psak of the Magen Avram in the name of Vaz. That again, the Shulchan Aruch only meant to say that this is a Din D'Rabbanan. It's a Din Mitam Safek. He's not sure how to paskin whether mitzvah tzrichas kavanah or not. And therefore we split the psak. When it comes to a Din D'Araisa, mitzvah tzrichas kavanah. When it comes to a Din D'Rabbanan, mitzvahs ain't tzrichas kavanah. Now that's a very important thing.
Then it should be what you say. If it's Daraisa, you do it. And if it's the Rabbanan, you don't do it.
Meaning the Shulchan Aruch should have split the Psak, right? So again, it's a stretch to put this into the words, but that's the major discussion the Primigadim and others have. Exactly how do we understand the Psak of the Shulchan Aruch? It's correct. V'chein halacha is very misleading. V'chein halacha sounds like that's the Psak and that's it. But the Primigadim and others understand not so. Yeah.
But you need the second component of the connection between the person doing the Maisa Mitzvah and the So then how does Mitzaseik ever come off the ground? I mean, Mitzaseik, the guy, he certainly didn't have, if he's Mitzaseik, he certainly didn't have Kavanah to be Yotzei,
right,
you, the Mitzvah.
Right. So
I'm saying, well, how does that get into the discussion? If you need both components of
right.
that'll be in, that you have to have,
so we don't paskin like that.
And you need
Hatokei L'Shir is basically a Mesasek, right?
Right.
For himself. for anybody else.
But our Gemara says
he clearly didn't have an intention to be.
So he's not
Yotze. No, so our Gemara says he's Yotze, but we don't paskin like that because we hold that mitzvah tzrichas kavana. That's the reason why misasik is not a fulfillment of the mitzvah. Let me just give some more background into the din mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Let's see if your question still stands. So, when you back up a little bit, our Gemara is making an assumption that we have this idea of the mitzvah tzrichas kavana, but where does this come from? Our Gemara doesn't explain where do we derive such a klal from. Whoever made up such a principle that mitzvah tzrichas kavana? God tells you to do the mitzvah, shake the lulav, blow the shofar. Whoever came up with this idea, you have to have a mind for anything. Where did this come from? So this is also a big, big discussion in the Achronim. Where does this stem from? So the Levush writes the following. The Levush writes in Simon Samach, there, where the Shulchan Aruch talks about this halacha, the Levush writes as follows. Kai malan, we hold, we paskin, mitzvah tzrichas kavana. Okay. Kidi alfinan mikra lekaman simen tafkuf peites. As we learn later on in Shulchan Aruch and simen tafkuf peites, and there I speak about it. That's what the Levush writes. So the Prima Gadim jumps on the Levush. He says, excuse me, sir, I looked in your Sefer in Tafkuf Peites, and you don't follow up with what you promised me you were going to talk about. You don't explain where you got this from. So we have an idea. The Gemara takes it as an assumption that mitzvah tzrichas kavana, which puzzle do we learn it from? I don't know what you're talking about. That's what the Prima Gadim writes. So Prima Gadim is not sure what's the story. Where do we learn this from? So some Achronim are not sure, in the first place, whether mitzvah tzrichas kavana is a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan. There's a sefer Ara d'rabbanan, which goes through many different halachas and tries to figure out whether a given halacha is a din d'oraisa or a given halacha is a din d'rabbanan. A very important thing to know about in many different cases, whether or not a particular halacha is a din d'oraisa or a din d'rabbanan. So here, the Ara d'rabbanan has the same suffix. Should we assume that this whole halacha is a din d'oraisa, or should we assume it's only a din d'rabbanan? What's a nafkamina? What does it matter if it's d'oraisa or d'rabbanan? So a nafkamina would be as follows. Let's say the Prima Gadim writes, the following. It's a little bit of a complicated nafkamina, so I don't know, should we get into it or not? I don't know. The Prima Gadim has an interesting case. You'll help me figure it out. The Prima Gadim writes, there were times that Chazal made a din d'rabbanan, which basically uprooted the way the din d'oraisa was originally intended to be kept. So you take, for example, it says you're supposed to sit in a sukkah on sukkahs. The Chachamim limited the way that you can perform that mitzvah, and they said if you sit in a certain way in the sukkah, you're not in performance of the mitzvah. For example, somebody who sits at the very edge of the sukkah and the shulchan is besoch habayis, the Gemara says, you're not in performance of the mitzvah. Why not? Nowhere does the Torah say that your table also has to be in the sukkah. So that's clearly a din d'rabbanan. Why is it din d'rabbanan? Because they're afraid. Shemi yimashech hachashulchanu. Because maybe while you're in the middle of eating, you're going to go get something from the table, and you're going to forget, oh, I'm supposed to be sitting in the sukkah, and then you're going to eat out of the sukkah. So therefore, the Chacham said, you're not in performance of the mitzvah. What if somebody goes ahead and sits in a sukkah like that? Are they in performance, at least, of the din d'oraisa? Or do you say, no, once the Chachamim limited the way you can perform the mitzvah d'oraisa, it's as if you haven't performed anything at all. What do you say?
The latter is the way we paskin. That the Rabbanim, in effect, changed the way.
So that's a tremendous chiddush. So let's say you take, for example, we have a halacha, you're supposed to make kiddush on Shabbos. We learned that from a din d'oraisa, right? Zechus yom Shabbos the kachu. Midrabbanan, they came along and said, kiddush makom suda. It's not good enough to have kiddush. You also have to eat the meal along with the kiddush. So what if you go ahead and you don't eat the meal? You just have kiddush by itself. So what do we say? You're not yotze kiddush at all? Even d'oraisa? So even the Araisa, do you have to repeat Kiddush only midrabbanan? Okay. Or do we say you didn't fulfill the obligation of mitzvahs of Zachar Siyama Shabbos, the Kachar on Shabbos? What would you say? So this is a discussion in the back of the Gemara Mesachim, because the Gemara in the last parak Mesachim talks about all the dinim of Kiddush. So this is a discussion there in the back of the Gemara Mesachim, in the Rishonim, where they talk about what's the halach in such a case. And Rabbeinu Yonah talks about it, another Rishonim talk about it, and Rabbi Kiva Eger talks about it as well in Shulchan Aruch in three different places, Reishai and Aleph twice, and Reishai and Gimel also in Hilchos Kiddush. And Rabbi Kiva Eger comes to the conclusion that if you don't have Kiddush Makom Suda, you're not in fulfillment of even the mitzvah d'oraisa, because the Chachamim have an ability to limit a din d'oraisa to the point that if you don't follow the way they tell you to do it, you're not even in fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa at all. It's a tremendous Kiddush to say such a thing.
There where it says, Poris Makom Kadesh Lo Yatsa, that's a
Peres Mafa Bekadosh, we hold you are Yotze.
It's okay, yeah.
That is good. You are able to do such a thing.
Okay.
So the Prima Gadim writes as follows. So the Prima Gadim has a suffix like this. When we, assuming that we say that the Chacham have the right to change a Dinda Araisa so far that if you don't listen to the way they set it up, you're not even in fulfillment of the Din D'oraisa at all. So the Prima Gadim has the following suffix. Is that only when a person is mazed, or is that even when a person is shoking? I told you it was a complicated enough Gemina. But here, the Prima Gadim says, is that only when you're bemazed, or is it even when you're beshoking? So take, for example, you have somebody who doesn't know Hilchos Sukkah at all. They make a sukkah, there's no room, it's very crowded. So they decide, we're going to have the buffet table inside of the house, so that this way we can save room in the sukkah, we're not going to be so crowded. They're not doing it bemazed because they want to go against the rule that the Chacham set up of how you're supposed to do the sukkah. They're doing it just for convenience. So in a case like that, the person is not violating the Din D'Rabbana bemazed, they're violating b'shogeg, or b'ones, whatever it is. So would you say, even in a case like that, the Chacham would tell you you're not even in fulfillment of your mitzvah d'oraisa, even in a case like that where you don't even intend to violate the Din D'Rabbanan? Or do we say, no, it's only when a person is trying in defiance to go against the mitzvah d'oraisa and to go against the mitzvah d'Rabbanan, then we say, if you violate what the Chacham said, you're not even yotze the mitzvah at all. But if you're only doing it be'ones, or you're doing it b'shogeg, that doesn't count at all. That's not considered like you haven't fulfilled anything because you tried your best, you didn't realize. So the Prima Gadim draws a distinction and he said, no, this is only b'mezid. Let's not get carried away. If a person does it b'shogeg or be'ones, we would assume you are in fulfillment of your mitzvah. Because after all, you did the mitzvah as best as you could. You didn't realize that there was another factor that you had to keep in mind. So that's the Prima Gadim writes. So the same over here. What if a person does a mitzvah without kavanah? What if a person does a mitzvah without kavanah? Right? So we hold mitzvah srichas kavanah. So what if I put on my tefillin tomorrow morning without kavanah? So why am I not having kavanah? Most people don't not have kavanah because they say, I hate the chacham so much that I'm not going to have kavanah. They want me to have kavanah, I'm going to show them I'm not going to have kavanah tomorrow. Most people don't do that. Most people are b'shogeg. They're not thinking about it, right? Misasik. Spacing out, I'm daydreaming and thinking about all the meetings I have today, thinking about my carpools. I'm not thinking about anything else. I'm not paying attention to what I'm doing. So that would make a major nafka mina. If you assume that mitzvah tzrichas kavanah is actually a din d'oraisa, that's mandated, that's required every time you have a mitzvah, well, if you don't have the kavanah, you don't have the kavanah, you're out. If you hold it's only din d'rabbanan, so if a person doesn't have kavanah only because they're spacing out, would you say that they're not in fulfillment of the mitzvah d'oraisa at all? That's what I'm saying. It's a convoluted nafkamina a little bit, but I think it's a very interesting one for your consideration. What do you think?
Does the Chacham redefine the mitzvah, or is it an additional component of the mitzvah? That's the right. Are they redefining sukkah, or they just have another in that case, redefining sukkah, or they're just adding in a requirement when you're eating in the sukkah? There's a question: how you define that? Because if they're not redefining. I'm redefining eating in the sukkah. Just saying that that's not what you should be doing. So why, it's hard to, other than...
Meaning, no. So the first premise is that when the Chachamim somehow limit the performance of a mitzvah, that limits it even on the level of Daraisa. That's the first Chiddush. Again, that's subject to debate also. But if we assume that way, then you can move on. As I said, it's a fancy nafkamina, but anyway, so this is a discussion that is had when we have this requirement of mitzvah srichas kavanah. Should we assume that this is mandated midaraisa, or should we assume it's only midarabana? So Rabbi David Mandelbaum, who we just spoke about, he's mamash gaon olam. The man is such a genius. It's unbelievable. You know, in the Parnas Yosef, everybody has seen it, I assume? You look through the Parnas Yosef, it's unbelievable. He quotes from like every Torah journal from all over the world, everything. I don't know how he knows everything. He has his hands on everywhere. Unbelievable, the guy. So somebody told me that when he went to print the first Pardes Yosef, the first Chelek that he printed, so somebody told me that everything was handwritten. He doesn't have a computer. So he doesn't use Bar Ilan like the rest of us fakers. He really knows it from the real stuff. So Rabbi Mandelbaum had it all written out. He gave it to the printer, and then the typesetter gave him back his original copy, the notes. So he went to the Seamus and he put it in the Seamus. So someone told him, you should save it. How can you put this in Seamus? He said, what am I going to do with it? The typesetter just typed it all up. He said, no one's going to believe that you did this all in your own head. You should save it, that people should know that you did this all in your own head. He said, okay, so they won't believe him. Big deal. That's the kind of guy he is. Amazing. Not a guy. He's an incredible Talmud Chacham. So he told me, I was in email contact with him today, so he asked me, what's the Shiran tonight? I told him, it's the Shiran Kavana. So he told me an amazing Maramakum. He said that Rabbeinu Yonah, so... He said, everybody knows all the regular Rabbeinu Yonahs. Not everybody I know. So he's assuming, of course, everybody knows all the regular Rabbeinu Yonahs. But he says, I know of a Rabbeinu Yonah that nobody knows. That Rabbeinu Yonah, as printed in the Sefer Zikaron for Reb Chaim Shmulevitz's Yartzeit, who has that? So of course he has it. So he tells me that in the Sefer Zikaron from Chaim Shmuel Levitz's yard, said they dug up a ksavi out of Rabbeinu Yonah from somewhere, I don't know. And Rabbeinu Yonah writes the following. It's an amazing find. I told to my father, he never knew this. He says Rabbeinu Yonah writes the following: Afagav desvir le the Ravuna mitzvah sriches kavana. Even though our Gemara says that Ravuna is of the opinion that mitzvah sriches kavana, and that's the way our Gemara, that's the way the Shulchan Aruch paskins lahalacha as well. Nikamakam kvar nafak bei min haTorah. Still, even though you say mitzvah sriches kavana, still we assume kvar nafak bei min haTorah, says Rabbeinu Yonah. Even though mitzvah sriches kavana, we still assume you have already performed your mitzvah midaraisa, even though you don't have kavana, which is a tremendous chiddush. Rabbeinu Yonah is telling us that this whole halacha of mitzvah sriches kavana is only a din derabanan, and therefore, even if you don't have kavana, afal pi shelo deskavin latzei, says Rabbeinu Yonah, you still have a fulfillment of your mitzvah daraisa regardless, because the whole requirement of mitzvah sriches kavana is only a din derabanan. Now, this is a very, very interesting discussion, but if you assume it's a requirement midaraisa, not like Rabbeinu Yonah, which again, as we said, is a big suffix. So the Bnei Yisachar doesn't only have Chassidish Torah, the Bnei Yisachar also has a very lumdish sefer called Derech Pikudecha, which nobody ever heard of, but because nobody reads the non-Chassidish Svarim anymore. So the Derech Pikudecha is an amazing sefer, and there he has a discussion about Mitzvah Sriches Kavana as well. So there he talks about what is the source in Chumash to tell us that Mitzvah Sriches Kavana. So he writes it's actually a source from last week's Parsha, Parshas Kisavo, that the Torah says as follows: Hayom hazeh Hashem Elokecha mitzavcha la'asos es kol achukim ha'ele v'shamarta v'asisa osam b'chal levavcha u'b'chal nafshecha. So what do you mean? I should keep all the mitzvahs b'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha? What do you mean? It means keep the mitzvahs and shake the lulav b'chal yodecha v'chal raglecha v'chal machshev osecha. What does it mean b'chal levavcha v'chal nafshecha? Says the Bnei Yisachar, it's not a Chassidish Torah, he says the pshat is that the Ribbono Shel Olam requires of us not only to shake the lulav but also to do it b'chal lev v'chal nefesh, which means you have to have in mind mitzvah sriches kavana at the time that you're performing the mitzvah. Other achronim say, I mentioned this to my father today when I spoke to him, so I was telling him about this Bnei Yisachar and about Rabbeinu Yonah, so he said, no, the Mishnah Berurah quotes the pasuk. Now, I didn't see it in the Mishnah Berurah, I don't know all the Mishnah Berurahs, but I saw it in other achronim say this, that we learn it from the pasuk in Kriya Shema, u'la'avda b'chal levavchem v'chal nafshechem. That perhaps we learn it from that pasuk. It means you have to serve Hashem b'chal levavchem v'chal nafshechem. My father claims that the Mishnah Berurah writes that as well. I didn't have a chance to look through all the Mishnah Berurahs this afternoon, but if anyone wants to do that, you can let me know. And that's also perhaps where we might learn this from. So this is a very important discussion. The question is, how far do we take it? I see we're running out of time, which is not good. But the question is, how far do we take this idea of mitzvah sriches kavana? So let's say you take, for example, the Shulchan Aruch here is talking about when you perform a mitzvah, do you have to have kavana to perform that mitzvah, or is it good enough just to do the act? So now the Bnei Yisachar in that same piece, in the Derech Pekudah, goes in the opposite direction. What about when it's a wrong way to say it, when I'm performing a los ase. You don't usually perform a los ase, but let's say a person is abstaining from a los ase. So let's say I don't talk Lashon Hara. Now the reason I don't talk Lashon Hara is not because I don't want to, but because there's nobody here to talk to. So am I getting any schar for holding myself back from talking Lashon Hara? What, are you going to talk to the walls? Or you have somebody who's in the hospital and they're not eating chazer, meaning usually they're always eating treif, they're going to restaurants that aren't kosher. But now they happen to be in the hospital on a feeding tube, so they're not eating treif. Not because they don't want to, so they're not having kavana not to be over the aveira, but it's just the nature of the situation that they're in.
That's more
of a so that's a discussion that he has. He argues, maybe you should say, the same way mitzvah sriches kavana in the positive, so too mitzvah sriches kavana in the negative. And if a person wants to get points for not violating a lav, you have to make sure you don't say, meaning, I pass someone on the street, he steals my parking spot, I'm in the middle of Manhattan, I'm really angry at him, I'm about to pull out my gun and shoot him, but I decide that wouldn't really be normal of me to do that to somebody else, so you know what, I'm not going to. You don't get points for that. Why? Because you should have not killed him because of Lusirtzach. And because you didn't kill him only because you realized that that's a not normal thing to do, you don't get points for not violating Lusirtzach at all. So that's a very interesting assumption that the Bnei Yisachar makes here, that maybe we should assume that the same way you say mitzvah sriches kavana for performing a mitzvah, So to mitzvah srichas kavana in the opposite direction, that to get points for not violating an avera, you have to have specific intent that the only reason I'm not going to kill the guy who just stole my parking spot in Manhattan, you know, that's the biggest avera you can do. The only reason I'm not killing him is because of lo sirtzach, not because normal people in the world don't do such things, but rather because the Torah says lo sirtzach. It's a tremendous chiddush, but it's something to consider. There's a further question in the Menchas Chinuch. Let's say, for example, a very famous Menchas Chinuch with regard to the nature of the mitzvah of Tashbisu on Pesach. So you have a mitzvah to get rid of all your chametz. And all the Acharonim talk about Tashbisu. What's the nature of the mitzvah? Do I really have to go ahead and burn the chametz, or do I just have to make sure that when Pesach comes around, there's no chametz in my house? So what's a nafkamina? Let's say I live in my wife is totally OCD, and she never lets any cookies, crackers into the house. She's afraid it's going to make, not my wife, but if somebody is, and they're nervous that, you know, it's going to make crumbs, and they don't want to have any problems, and therefore, no chametz in the house all year long. So Erev Pesach, I don't have to do anything because the makom she machnisim chametz. If you have a house that doesn't have any chametz and you don't do bedichas chametz, so do I have an obligation, asked the Menchas Chinuch, to go out on Erev Pesach and buy chametz in order that I should put chametz into my house, in order that I should do the mitzvah of bedichas chametz? Or do you say no? The mitzvah of Tashbisu is if you have chametz in your house, you get rid of it. If it doesn't apply to you, it doesn't apply to you. Like, not everybody has a mitzvah to go ahead and divorce their wife just because the Torah talks about giving a get. The Torah just means, if you're under the circumstances where you need to get divorced, unfortunately, so then this is the process that you should follow. But if you don't need that resource, if you don't need that prescription that the Torah gives, so you don't follow it. The same by Tashbisu. So that's the subject that the Menchas Chinuch has. So here, says the Menchas Chinuch, he wants to know, is this like shofar and lulav that you have a mitzvah bekumva asay, you have to go ahead and do it? Or is it a mitzvah like other mitzvahs that even passively you can take care of the mitzvah, because as long as you don't have chametz in your house, you have taken care of the mitzvah regardless, even without doing any activity. So ask the Menchas Chinuch, what's a nafkamina? Nafkamina number one is obviously whether or not I have to go out and buy chametz to perform my mitzvah. Nafkamina number two is, he says as follows, if you're going to say that the mitzvah of Tashbisu is b'shei v'al taseh, that the mitzvah is just make sure not to have chametz in your house, but you don't have to do anything actively, says the Menchas Chinuch, ein sarach kavana l'chlatzei sosa ha-mitzvah. When you're performing a mitzvah that's done passively, like this one, like a person who has no chametz in their house, they don't have to do anything, they're yotze the mitzvah without doing any activity. So do you have to have kavana over Pesach that I'm yotze the mitzvah of Tashbisu, or not? That's very nonsensical, says the Menchas Chinuch, to assume that when you have a mitzvah b'sheva al tase, you have to assume that the person has to have in mind that I'm doing the mitzvah even though he's not doing anything. So therefore, says the Menchas Chinuch, that whenever you have a mitzvah of that nature, this whole principle of mitzvah strichas kavana would not apply. It's only by the mitzvah of shofar and lulav and tzitzis, when I'm actually doing something bepoa, when I'm doing something biyadayim, then you have to have kavana to be yotze the mitzvah. When it's a mitzvah that's happening on its own, I don't have to have kavana to be yotze the mitzvah. What am I supposed to be mechavin? I'm not doing anything. So that's what the Menchas Chinuch argues. Now again, what we mentioned before from the Bnei Yisachar about by a lo saseh, maybe there's room to argue. Maybe there's room to argue that the same way he says in order to get the points for not violating a lo saseh, you have to have in mind, maybe to get the points for fulfilling a mitzvah, you also have to have in mind, even if it's b'shei b'al taseh. So this is a very, in my opinion, it's a very interesting suggestion that they give. Let's say you take another example. Forget about the Menchas Chinuch chiddush about Tashbisu by Pesach. Not to do malach on Shabbos. That's a passive mitzvah, which is a mitzvah saseh. Right? We have an essay of Shabbos on that. You're not supposed to do malach on Shabbos. Not only do you violate an aveir if you do malach, but you fulfill a mitzvah when you don't violate a malach. So do I have to have in mind every minute of Shabbos?
You lose your mind if you do that.
Exactly, you go crazy. So the Menchas Chinuch says, it's ridiculous. How can you expect somebody to sit and go the whole every second of Shabbos and say, hinei nimuchan mezuman l'kayim mitzvah, that I'm not going to do malacha?
Yeah, plus, I mean, to have kavanah b'ani in all tasa, it's unlimited. What?
Yeah, I mean, any lo saseh, yeah, meaning every moment of the day you have a challenge whether or not to speak Lashon Hara.
Lashon Hara, Gneva, Gzela, Lotapa,
yeah, everything.
You won't do it.
That's the shaila. That's why it's a big chiddush. Now, the one last point is, do we say that by Talmud Torah, the halacha would apply as well? When I'm learning Torah, do I have to have in mind that I'm doing this l'shem mitzvah? So, I don't mean to say, don't get the mistaken impression that when a person's learning, they should do it for academic pursuit. Obviously, that's not what our conversation is about. I don't know if I mentioned last week, did I say about my father? I had in YU a Wexner Honors Program that you get basically nothing. You just get paid more money to learn the same thing that everyone else learned. So how are they going to decide who gets in the program? So everybody has to write a whole Dvar Torah, and I said the story of?
Yeah.
Oh. So the reason why I say the story so often is because it's so much of my father's hashkafa that when you learn Torah, it has to be not for intellectual pursuit. You're learning Torah because this is Torah Hashem, ki hu chayechem v'ruchem echem. And at the same time, the Eglital writes in his Akdama that if you assume that a person is learning Torah and he's doing it because he enjoys it, because this is something that gives them a lot of pleasure, which is what we're supposed to be feeling when we learn Torah. That's the understanding of the Avnei Nezer, about the whole nature of the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. So the Avnei Nezer argues that you don't need to have Kavana when you're learning Torah for the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Why? Because he says, if you'll read later in the Gemara, as we'll get to maybe in the next couple of weeks, as you read later in the Gemara has a chiddush that when a person is having hana from a mitzvah, then we assume mitzvah saying tzviches kavana. It's like almost built in. Because you're enjoying it, because having hana, of course you're thinking about it. You don't have to specifically think about it. You're thinking about it in mela as you're doing the act, and you're enjoying what you're doing. So obviously, says the Eglei Tal, who could ever learn Torah without having hana? So who needs to have kavana when you're learning Torah? There's no such thing. No such thing. So he says, he argues that when it comes to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, we don't assume that mitzvah tzviches kavana, because the whole nature of Talmud Torah is to enjoy the learning. If you're not enjoying the learning, you're not fulfilling the mitzvah in the first place. If you are enjoying the learning, then you don't have to have kavana because it's built in. That is the kavana. So that's the argument that the Avnei Nezer puts forth as to why this halacha might not apply to the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. I saw a very fascinating chiddush in the Dvar Avram, and with this we'll close. I see it's already 10 o'clock. So the Dvar Avram has a chiddush to suggest, not like the Avnei Nezer. Why should we assume that the mitzvah of Talmud Torah, you don't have to have kavana? He says a very sadistic chiddush. He says the following. When do we say mitzvah tzviches kavana? That's when we say somebody can perform an act. You can always take a trumpet and blow it. Now, how are we going to distinguish? How are we going to differentiate whether or not you're blowing for the mitzvah or you're blowing because you happen to enjoy blowing a trumpet? That's what we say, mitzvah tzviches kavana. If you have specific intent, that is going to single out the activity that you're doing as a mitzvah. If you don't have intent, then we say you're part of a symphony orchestra and it doesn't help us, it doesn't count for the mitzvah at all. However, says the Dvar Avraham, since the mitzvah of Talmud Torah is a mitzvah that we have every moment of every day, whenever you see somebody with a sefer, you don't have to say, oh, I'm not sure, is the person actually doing this because they have a mitzvah of Talmud Torah, or they're doing it for something else? Every moment of the day that a person's learning, we know that it's always directed at the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. And therefore he argues that the only time mitzvah tzviches kavanah is a discussion is when you have shofar, when you have lulav, when you have tzitzis, that people can do those activities either for a mitzvah or they can do them on their own. But when a person is learning Torah, every moment of learning the Torah is a mitzvah, and therefore you don't have to have specific intent in order to show that this is only being done for the mitzvah. Of course, every moment that you learn, you have a mitzvah, yigisa bel yom v'layla, you're fulfilling that mitzvah, and therefore kavanah would not be required, because there's no question about it that at the time that the person's learning, they are obviously doing it l'shem the mitzvah of Talmud Torah. Anyway, this is basically some of the background with regard to the halacha of mitzvah tzviches kavanah or not. Very fascinating sugya. I'm sorry that we only scratched the surface a little bit, but Amir Tzashem will pick up the shir after Sukkot.